Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot. And also, at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
Kurt, so happy to be back at PBT Extra after last week off. How are you doing? How's your weekend?
I'm good. I'm doing well. I actually went up to the snow for a day outside Southern California. Like the one, there's so much snow and a little too much snow in some areas, but I was able to go up and my daughter went skiing and kind of spent a day in the mountains, and it was beautiful. So it was just.
Are you ski or snowboard?
She skis. I ski as well. I did not that day, just for some long story logistical reasons that were going on, but it was just being back up in the mountains and doing a little hiking and just being around the snow and the crisp mountain air, like, does me good.
Yeah, it snowed yesterday, a flurry here in New York, and it's, once again, it's just weird. It's like days you think, okay, spring's here, and then it just flurries, yeah. And it's freezing. I think it was yesterday, and I was just like, I can't do that. And today it's sunny, so today, I don't know what's going on. Kurt.
What have you been? I mean, obviously you were in Brooklyn for the A-10 tournament, but you've been.
Yeah, I was covering a lot of basketball recently, and so it's been a lot of fun. And I think, you know, as far as artistically, you know, I remember we talk about this all the time. What's inspiring me? I went to the opera and I was wrong. I remember I told you I thought that was my hot take that the opera would be brilliant. Remember this spring?
Yeah.
And I went to the Met Opera. I saw Norma. I had to leave halfway through. It was so I just couldn't do it. It was so disappointing and disheartening to me. So I'm still not particularly inspired by. I think anything right now, which is kind of sad. It's a little sad, but the opera, I was wrong. I was wrong about the opera.
The concert I went to, I kind of forgot. We've done this for a couple weeks ago, was out here, the New Orleans Preservation Hall Jazz Band.
Oh yeah. You like that band a lot.
I do. So we had went out and had some Cajun food beforehand, then went and saw the New Orleans Preservation Hall Jazz Band. It had a great night.
Can't complain. So let's get into basketball since we have a lot to talk about. So let's talk about the Grizzlies. There was a time in which the Grizzlies appeared to be the best team in the West, you know, or you could argue top two, you know, for a long time. And then now Ja Morant taking this leave of absence, Brandon Clark and Stephen Adams out for the season. Where do they fall heading into the most critical part of the season, Kurt?
Yeah, they started stumbling on the court when Stephen Adams went out, right? Like they just missed the guy who does the dirty work, who sets the picks and is physical inside and provides. Brandon Clark can do some of that, but he's the guy who's the big body in the paint that's and allows Jaren Jackson Jr. to come in flying around, just boxes guys out, who just does those kind of things. And you could see how much they missed him on the court. Now losing Brandon Clark for the season with the Achilles and now we'll see if and when Ja returns this season, but they do, with everything going on, haven't they felt like a team kind of in turmoil, a team that kind of lost its bearings?
Yeah, I mean, I think with what I think about Memphis, they were a team in which I didn't think they were contenders at any point, but I did think they were taking leaps forward, right? I did think they were growing as a team. Yeah. And going through the process, because in the NBA, there is a process. You know, you kind of have to be bruised a little bit. You have to kind of go through each series, and, you know, you have to get beaten. Like, you know, that's kind of like how it works. So I thought that they were going through that process and becoming, like, you know, purified in that sense of, like, going through the furnace and coming out like purified gold. And then this came up. And this is, I think, indicative of one – I don't necessarily understand the Western Conference generally, you know, like And then, I think with this team, it also is indicative of their youth, you know. And I think there's an element of like, okay, well, you don't know what to be afraid of when you're young, Kurt, you know.
Yeah.
So I feel like at some point, like, I don't think it's going to get to them like it would maybe some older teams. I think they still might be able to do a little bit of a push. But at the same time, too, like, you're not going to go very far without Morant, like, no. Period, you know.
Yeah, I think two things I would say, too, also are, A, I am glad that Ja is getting the help he needs, and I'm glad that the conversation kind of became, and especially around the Grizzlies themselves, it was not about punishment. It was about, hey, how do we get this guy to find the path he needs to be on? What kind of help can we provide? And he's now, you know, he's in a counseling center in Florida. I don't know. And nobody really knows if and when we'll see him this season or during the playoffs. But that's secondary, isn't it? Like, what matters is him finding the path that's best for him going forward. And by the way, I still think you were talking about them figuring themselves out and purifying and coming out. That doesn't just have to happen in the playoffs. I think that there's something to them as an organization and as players where – when you were saying that, the phrase that came to mind was a Pat Riley phrase, which is make the most important thing the most important thing.
Yeah.
Focus on if you're going to be this basketball team, then make that the most important thing. And that seemed to get away from them. It gets away from Dylan Brooks, doesn't it? It seemed to get away from Ja. Like, they kind of – don't you feel like this could be part of that learning process?
It's certainly part of the learning process. I think the team itself, you look at, okay, well, who's it built around, the foundations? You know, do you have alignment from ownership, coach, GM, yeah, all the way down? Are role players buying into the roles? You look at Dylan Brooks, clearly he has bought into his role as a role player. Like, he understands what his job is, you know? And I think from that perspective, you know, I'll give you an example. Like, Bruce Bowen for the Spurs, remember? Like, you know, his whole thing was like a Kobe matchup. Right. Like, we need someone to lock down Kobe. And he, you know, was that guy. He was a great defensive player and he was a knockdown 3-point shooter. So I understand, like, OK, well, what's your role? What is PJ Tucker's role on that championship Bucks team? You know, so I think that's heartening to see that it's encouraging. Right. When you look at the Memphis Grizzlies and like, OK, well, Desmond Bane understands his role. Jaren Jackson Jr. understands his role. You know, and Dylan Brooks understands his role, and not only understands it, there was a huge piece in ESPN where he relishes the ability to get under people's skin. Like, he relishes that role of being, you know, public enemy number one. And so I think those are all encouraging parts as far as like, well, how do you grow as a team? But I do think the youth part, as far as like trying to start rivalries or like trying to, you know, like, I don't understand that part of it. And that's kind of what I mean. I think it detracts from like the professionalism of like, well, what is our goal? What's the most important thing? It's, you know, it's to win a championship. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I agree that with the sort of manufactured, I guess, I mean, they did play the Warriors in a playoff series, and the Warriors privately, by the time they got to the finals last year, were like, yeah, the Grizzlies were a real problem for us because of the athleticism. Just they're so much more athletic than the aging Warriors were, that they had been a problem. With Dylan Brooks, by the way, I like the Bruce Bowen comparison, but I think you hit the nail on the head. And by the way, I hadn't really thought of him like a PJ Tucker, but it's sort of the same thing, right? If you're going to be the defensive stopper, you've got to be able to be good enough on offense that I can't ignore you. It was the problem Matisse Thybulle had with the 76ers last year, which is, yeah, he's a great defender. He's great. We need him on that end. If I can ignore him and play 4-on-5 on the other end, I'm going to be able to slow you down. Dylan Brooks has to get to a point where his shot is good enough, where he is enough of an offensive threat that I can't ignore him. Because right now I can, and that's a holding. Like, those are the little steps. You don't have to be, like you said, don't have to be great at anything. If you can shoot 40% on corner threes and I can't leave you, that's enough, man.
Yeah, or you have to be like the defensive player of the year, like Marcus Smart. You know, like, you have to be a glue guy who's a defensive player of the year. I think Marcus Smart's another great guy to, you know, as far as like, what is my role? You know, like, you got your data. Like, you know, like, your job is not to score. Your job is to be a glue guy in the locker room, to be our emotional leader and support, and then, you know, to be a defensive player of the year. And that's kind of, I think, like, that's what I love about the Grizzlies, is that I think people understand very clear. It's like Tyus Jones understands his role. And I think you have young guys who buy into that. However, I do think that, Like, remember earlier in the season, I said they're kind of like a punk band. Remember, I was like, that's kind of what the Grizzlies are. And I do think, like I said, that gives them an edge because they don't know what to be afraid of. But I also think that that hurts them tremendously because one of the problems with like punk bands, like you know, you grew up like liking punk music. It's like, you know, this is a job and the season's really long. And like the whole point of the NBA is you have to be a professional, right? You have to have that edge, but you also have to be professional and you have to be able to, you know, bring some sort of consistency to the edge for the entire season through the playoffs. You can't, you know, peak and then dip and then peak. There has to be this element of consistency and controlled punkness, you know? And I don't, and like, I think that's kind of where the youth is a little too far on the Grizzlies. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I think they can learn a lot in these playoffs though. Cause I don't just look at the standings. They might slip below the Kings. The Kings are playing fantastic basketball right now, by the way. Like the
you're right.
We didn't talk about it, but still the that like my favorite story in the NBA this year.
No, yeah, you were right.
Yeah, I mean they're just a fun team. They're not. Things are going to shake out for them. Like I suddenly am like the conference finals. Like if they get somebody they can beat in the first round, then they get the stumbling Grizzlies without John. Like it's a deeper run than I expected for them.
Yeah,
and that said, I don't want to. We're not going into deep into Kings talk, but the Kings are on such a high that I can and playing so well that I can see them getting the 2 seed. Over the Grizzlies, but the Grizzlies, where they've the cushion they've built up there, and especially since the Suns are the 4 seed and they're missing Kevin Durant, and they're just treading water. I don't see anybody catching them. Like they're gonna have a really good seed, and that gives them the opportunity for the kind of run they're hoping for.
Once again, I don't think they're going to go far without John Morant. I think he's the linchpin here. It's clear, you know, in my mind. I understand, you know, that they've a little over 500 new with him absent, but we're talking about a very small, you know, group of games. And we're also talking, you know, the playoffs is a different level of intensity. So, you know, you need talent to win, and they need John Morant. However, you're right. I mean, look at right now they're sitting at 41-26. That's their record in the second spot. Kings 40-27. Suns 37-32, Warriors 36-33, Clippers 36-33, Timberwolves 35-34, then Thunder 34-35. So like everyone, and then the Mavs are right there, the Lakers are right there. Everyone's kind of stuck in the mid 30s.
As of this morning, as of us recording this, because I had been writing on this morning, 4 through 13 is all separated by 3 games in the West. Like it's just it's insane how like just if you have a hot week and a half.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I mean is that's why I think Memphis is in a really bad spot because of that. Like, okay, if you tell me 2 or 3 teams are in that scenario, you have a hot week and a half. Like, okay, what are the odds? But if you're telling me that the vast majority over whatever 60-70% of the conference and like they're in that group of if anyone, you know, if 4 through 13 have a good week and a half, we're dropping, you know, like that to me is concerning because you're the likelihood of that happening. I think is, you know, it's much higher than in a different scenario. So that's kind of where I'm worried about the Grizzlies, you know, but of course, you know, without Morant, I don't think they can really do anything in the playoffs. Yeah. So that's the big thing for me.
I will add this about the West. I think what's going to make the West playoffs fascinating, Corey, is the guys, the players that scare you, Stephen Curry, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant sort of at 4, but Kawhi Leonard and Paul George all are in the bottom, Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving all in that bottom half of the bracket. Like it is, you get that 2 or 3 seed, you have a potential real threat in the first round. Like it's not like the guys with the playoff experience that we keep expecting to flip the switch are going to be on the bottom half of that bracket. And they're all guys and teams who know how to win on the road. It's going to make the West hard on teams like Memphis who are going to earn this home court, but then they're going to draw somebody really good in the first round, regardless of where they land.
Also with the whole, I want to bring this up before we move on, you know, we're talking about how the rivalries and all that jazz with the Memphis Grizzlies. I, in my opinion, you know, do you remember those Spurs teams that played against the Grizzlies, actually, remember with Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph and Mike Conley, and how it was like,
the grit and grind Grizzlies.
Yeah, and there was like always. I remember being a Spurs fan. I mean, my whole life, but at that time, it was so interesting because it was like we're the number one seed, and this 8 seed, like it's just a matchup issue, and like at any given moment, like they could kind of like knock us off, which was really frustrating. You know, that's kind of how I feel like that that Grizzlies team reminded me of this Grizzlies team. But you look at like the Warriors or whatever, like you mentioned, like there's a matchup issue here. We're like, well, what are you going to do with this? With they're so young, they're so athletic, they're so long. And, you know, John Morant is so clutch at any given moment. You're like, okay, well, how do we kind of handle them? But I do think as constructed, you know, they're not a contender. And, but like I said, John's like 23, you know, so like they have time to figure it out. But it is an interesting kind of question. I think they have more talent than that team back in the day, that other Grizzlies team. But for me right now, I think the Grizzlies at this juncture basically only present issues as far as like a matchup in a series or two, you know, and that I think is the ceiling at the current moment, which it's difficult to say out loud, right? But in a West where, you know, 4-13 is separated by three games, Kurt, I mean, it's like that's why I think they could eke out, you know. They can eke out, but it's not. But you won't match up against the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, no, I still think the top of the East is better.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
So while we're on the subject of bottom half of the team of playoffs, let's go to Corey's jukebox, because the Clippers, one of those teams, is in Corey's jukebox this week.
Yeah. So I wanted to go for an LA band. I've been, one of the things, cause I told you the offer just wasn't doing it for me and it isn't doing it for me. I wanted to go into underground hip hop. So I don't know if you follow underground hip hop. I don't know if you're into that, Kurt. There's an LA band called People Under the Stairs. And there's a song called The Breakdown. And I think it's a really interesting song, one, generally, because it's, you know, LA underground hip hop. And like, if you're going to talk about the LA teams, the Clippers, I guess, are underground hip hop.
They are compared to I'm trying to think of the proper musical comparison, but they'd be the diva showstoppers that are the Lakers.
Right, exactly. So, you know, so in LA basketball, I guess the Clippers are the underground. And so I wanted to kind of, you know, do that. And then also with Kawhi, I think Kawhi is like, he's like the MF Doom of the NBA, you know, like Kawhi is the guy who's like, he's not, you know, the most mainstream dude in the sense that, you know, people don't talk about Kawhi every day, even though he's supremely talented. He's kind of like an underground hip hop legend in that sense. And I thought, so like with The Breakdown, it's a whole song talking about like how, you know, they rap because like, you know, they have to, and they love rap, you know, and it's not about the commercial part of it or whatever. It's like, it's just like a love letter to all the rap legends that they grew up listening to and how they're in love with the game. And I feel like the Clippers, although I have my issues with the Clippers, I do feel like they are a group of like underground rap guys, like, you know, Batum just loves basketball. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like Paul George just loves basketball. Like, you know, and they have Westbrook, another guy who like, he'll play basketball, you know, like, anywhere, anytime, you know, like same with Kawhi Leonard in the sense of like Kawhi is just kind of like about the game. It seems like, you know, once again, I have my issues with them, but I have to tip my hat to them. I think they're like the underground hip hop team in the NBA.
That's actually a really interesting, I like the analogy and stick keeping in LA, but I kind of like that analogy with the Clippers. And I think that's, isn't that what makes them a dangerous playoff team? It's just a bunch of guys who like, play and love the game and love to hoop. And like, if they figure out how to get healthy and flip the switch.
I mean, like I said,
Kawhi Leonard and Jimmy Butler are also the two guys who are like, you genuinely know there's like two more gears that they just don't even think about in the regular season that they can just shift into.
I mean, I would put Kawhi on a way different level than Jimmy Butler. I mean, Kawhi is like, like I said, when this is all said and done, I don't know where he finishes. I mean, like, he is, he's so, so talented. And I think there are times when we just forget that because, you know, he doesn't play very much. Or, you know, like it's just.
Yeah. But even when he plays, it's still it's almost, I don't want to say robotic is the word I'm looking for, but he's like, he's going to get the ball and he's going to get to his spot at the elbow and he's going to hit the jumper and there's nothing you can do about it. He's too strong and too good to get there. And it feels so automatic that it's not Steph from 35 feet or whatever, you know, highlight reel thing. It's just almost methodical.
That's what I'm saying. And I think, once again, I think as far as underground hip hop guys are concerned, to me, Kawhi Leonard is like MF Doom. Like, he's just a dude who is surgical with his rhymes. He's a guy who's going to be, you know, a legend, like a legend's legend. Like Kawhi was doing things, you know, and I always think about this, like with LeBron, you know, when LeBron was thinking about going to LA, remember when he wanted to win the title or become, I think, I don't know the short list, but it was a very short list. He might be the only one on the list to win with three different teams, like in that scenario where I think he was like, to be like 30, I forgot what age he was, but he wanted to be really young and win with three different teams. You know, and I was thinking like Kawhi would and be finals MVP, right, with each of them. And I was like, Kawhi was finals MVP with the Spurs and won, finals MVP with the Raptors and won. And if he goes to the LA and wins with the Clippers, and he would be finals MVP, he would do exactly what LeBron has been trying to do, but like he's whatever, 6-8 years younger. And I was like, no one's talking about this. I was like, this guy is like, he's just like unbelievable. So to me, like, yeah, he's a quiet, like, hip-hop mastermind, which is why I did the underground reference.
I like it. I like it. And then I was it the Knicks were the other one? Your hometown team now?
Whoa. No, I'm a Spurs fan. But yeah, I live in New York. But yes, Julius Randle. This one I think is a little different. So I had to bring in Whiskey on a Sunday by the Dubliners. I don't know if, are you interested in Irish folk music?
I have listened to more Irish folk music than I care to admit. Yes.
Yes. I too love Irish folk music. There was a period in my life when I like just listened to the Dubliners for a while.
Great band.
And for me, this is one of my favorite songs by them. I think it's like a masterpiece. I think it's a great song. And the other thing is this song is about this guy who had a sideshow, and he would just do the same little song over and over again. And then he ended up dying. You know, and like all the stuff, like his, you know, the boards and the puppets he used for the sideshow ended up like going to mend the back door and everyone forgot about him. But then he could hear the ghosts, you know, like singing the song late, you know, after he died. And it's just about like this guy who basically had milk every day, but then he had whiskey on a Sunday. So he was really excited, you know, for Sundays. Just super, you know, super the Dubliners. And to me, that's kind of like Julius Randle. You know, like I feel like the Knicks are good again. They're good again. They're sitting in the fifth spot in the Eastern Conference. They're a playoff team, and this is a very competitive Eastern Conference. And I thought it was a flash in the pan. I didn't think they'd be able to sustain it. And you know, I understand he had a great all-star season and then, you know, kind of dipped, and then now he's kind of brought it back, you know. He's playing really well for them, and this team has matured. And Julius Randle is a guy, you know, I remember when he was in LA, you know, going from where he was in LA to where he is now, like leaps and bounds better. Like every day, you know, every year it seems like he matures. And I think with New York fans, you know, because I think he's going to end up being like that guy who like did the sideshow and like he's going to retire. Everyone's going to forget about him. And then they're going to remember, you know, like the great Knicks teams or like the moments where they're like, oh, you know, remember we were a good playoff team, and they'll finally give Julius Randle his due. But I think right now, I think people are still sleeping on him. So I that's kind of what I mean. I think that makes sense. I wanted to kind of bring him out.
I think that makes sense in the sense that he's part of the foundation that has turned this into a team where a star player would want to go now, which I don't think they were they were not 4 years ago, right? Like they couldn't get meetings with Kevin Durant and these guys. Now, I mean, they didn't get Kevin Durant obviously this time around, but like, you'd have to think about it, because if you're a star and you think, man, I could be additive there if I go there and I'm playing with Jalen Brunson, and maybe if Julius Randle has to go out in one of the, I don't, you know, who knows who this player is. We're not going to spend time speculating about what player goes where, but maybe he goes out, or maybe he's just the guy who helped, like you said, lay that foundation and then kind of gets forgotten about because star X comes in to New York finally and lifts them where they want to go. But he will have laid that foundation. I think that that's actually a really great analogy.
Yeah, and then whenever that time does come, when they're back in the finals or they ever do lift up a banner, if they don't mess it up, then I do think, every time you talk about that, you're going to have to remember the foundation that Julius Randle laid in that team and, in his leadership. And you're, like I said, like, oh, you're going to kind of, it's going to sing again. The ghost will sing again in that sense. But but at the moment, I think he's just kind of like brushed aside and people are kind of sleeping on him. And then, so I think he's not going to get the recognition that he deserves in the current moment. But, if the Knicks do turn the corner, I think the ghost will sing.
Yeah, I think Brunson gets a lot of credit and deservedly so. I don't know. Don't get me wrong, but Randall's resurgence has been key this year.
Yep. So that's my jukebox. So now let's head over to Kurt's corner. What do you want to talk about, Kurt? I know you wanted to focus on USA basketball, which is always a very exciting topic, especially as we just inch closer to the World Cup this August in the Philippines.
Right. It's World Cup, and then we're a year out from 2024 in Paris and the Olympics. So, yeah, Grant Hill, the new head of USA Basketball, took over for Jerry Colangelo, met with reporters this week and talked about things and talked about how his philosophy and not only his philosophy, but also where the program is and where basketball is got to be different than it was. When 2004, when I think, was it 2004? Well, yeah, 2004, after the loss in the Olympics, when Colangelo and Mike Krzyzewski kind of took over the program, one of the things they instituted was, hey, if you want to play in the Olympics, which is still here in the United States, that's still the thing everybody wants, right? Everybody wants the gold medal on the resume. They want to be part of the dream team. Plus, just for pure marketing reasons, the Olympics draws. If you're trying to promote your brand, your brand and your shoe, the Olympics are a better spot than the World Cup. It just is, right? So he's got – one of the rules that they put in was you got to play in a World Cup. We got to have consistency. You got to play in the World Cup before you can play in the Olympics, and we're going to do – Grant Hill's not doing it that way. And he's basically came out and said there's – that the players aren't going to do it. Today's players would not – commit to both. Part of that, frankly, is FIBA's fault, because FIBA moved the World Cup to 1 year before the Olympics and as an Olympic qualifier. So if you want to be one of the, I think it's only 12 or 16, 12 teams that are, you were there, 12 teams in the Olympics. Like it's not like 32 teams get to go to the World Cup in basketball, but it's only 12 in the Olympics, if I'm remembering the number right. So they're using the World Cup as a qualifier now. For the games. But because they're back-to-back years in a rest and recovery world, you're not going to get Kevin Durant or LeBron James or Steph Curry or the biggest stars who are still great contributors and might want to play in Olympics. They're not going to commit two straight summers to the program. They're not going to work out all through the summer 2 years in a row. So he's kind of gotten away from it. He's going to go with, hey, there's no tryouts. We're going to pick the 12 players. He's been in conversations with people. We're going to pick the 12 players, and they're going to go to a training camp in Las Vegas and play against some younger stars, and we'll go from there. And it was an interesting conversation. I mean, are you good with those kind of changes, Corey, or do you think it should be a little more traditional with tryouts and trying to develop that continuity?
No, I don't like it, but I will say I understand why. I understand why. This, I think, is being reflexive, to the type of players that are in the program, right? You're catering at a certain point. If you're an organization, you have to, cater to, the people that work for you or partner with you. And I understand that this is the way to go forward in that sense.
Yeah, I think the other thing that they'll be still good about, which is, or at least I hope so, is hey, I'm going to go get, let's go get 5 or 6 stars. Let's put Ja Morant in there for fun and put, you know, maybe maybe Curry wants to go or KD's always, I don't know if he'll keep playing. KD's been great on that stage. You can go get whoever, name your superstars. You go get your superstars. But they've been really good in the past about, and I know they've had Kevin conversations with Kevin Huerter. Like, hey, Kevin Huerter's going to be great. You put him in an international setting where he can just bomb threes from a shorter line, he's going to destroy people. Like, going, the USA Basketball was smart about getting, hey, we need a guy who can defend. We need, like, thinking through how the team would play internationally. We need stretch bigs. Kevin Love was, and Carmelo Anthony played that role for years. There's plenty of them now. You've got to go find those guys, right?
Yeah, I think from my perspective, I don't know. I'm just kind of old school in this sense that, you know, I think the recipe, the blueprint is pick the best players and let them play and make it very competitive, right? I think that's the blueprint. However, if the best players don't want to play, or if and this is kind of what I mean is I understand, okay, maybe you give people like Keldon Johnson was on the Olympic team, you know, and like Zach Levine, maybe you give them opportunities. To, JaVale McGee was on the Olympic team, you know, so maybe you're like, okay, well, you know, we can open up the scope a little bit and allow, you know, like you said, Kevin Huerter to pursue that Olympic dream, which is cool. But like I said, I think ultimately, you know, what is the blueprint? I think they're getting away from the blueprint, but largely because these players are brands. Like, that was how you started off this Kurt's Corner, is if you want to amplify your brand or sell your shoe. And I think that's not what the Olympics are about, one. And then the second thing, I think, is this idea of, well, if you are that big, you know, if you're that big of an enterprise, like, you know, if you are a corporation, you know, it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars, I think that can almost be like, you know how you have like the institutional lethargy, you know, where you're like, oh, a gallery can do an art show in whatever, a couple months, but it takes a museum a few years just because it's the size of it. I think you're having that same issue with these guys where it's like, you have to talk to the PR guys and the agents, then the business partners, then you have to do all, you know, and then the sponsors. And then it's just like this whole, it's just a contingent. It's just like, well, we just want to play basketball, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's just play basketball. And so I think that is the issue that I have with getting too big. It's hard to just do the thing that, you know, got you there in the first place, which is just play basketball.
Which is, I think, why we get drawn to guys like Kevin Durant, right? Who just like,
he just loves to hoop,
right?
Like, he just loves to hoop. Like, he's one of the guys who'll play.
If Kevin Durant just showed up at Rucker Park this summer, you'd be like, yeah, Kevin Durant to just show up at Rucker and play. Like, it wouldn't be out of character.
Yeah, and that's why I think is like my issue, and this is why I think the international guys, they'll play, like, you know, like, you know, they'll go overseas and they'll play for the national team, and they'll play all the way through the summers, and they'll come back, you know, in ready for basketball, in shape, and they'll like just hit the ground running and develop. But, you know, like, so the playing year round, getting back to like, well, you know, what is my job? It's to be professional. You know, it's not necessarily to be an investor. It's not necessarily, you know, I'm not getting paid to be an investor or to be, you know, an activist or to be, you know, whatever is the thing that other people are interested in. I think, you know, it's great that you have a platform to do that. But as far as strictly basketball speaking, you know, I do think that getting too big can present, you know, a lot of obstacles and give that institutional lethargy. And now the USA basketball team has to figure out, like, how do we combat that and not get into another scenario and be like the 1988 team, Kurt, remember, that got bronze and ended up having to then reboot everything and then pick, you know, the guys and do the dream team. Like, that was not because, oh, we should get Michael Jordan to go play basketball. It was, we had to do that, right? Like, we got embarrassed on a world stage as a country. Remember, this men's team, they've won, you know, like, you look at how many teams have won since that 1988. Yeah. Like, it's like Argentina, right? Like, it's like the only one.
It's Argentina. The Manu Ginobili team was
it's the only one. Yeah. Right. So that's what I'm saying is like, if we get into a scenario where, like, you know, the team slips because everyone wants to be a brand, and then it's going to go back to, we have to create a new dream team, I think that'd be an issue.
And the margin is much smaller, even than it certainly when it was in 1988. I mean, France is good. Spain, it took a lot for the U.S. to beat peak Spain a couple of years in a row, right? Like, when they had both Gasols and Fernandez and Ricky Rubio was right. Like, all the guys they had, I mean, they were just deep with good players. France is that way now. You've got Luka in Slovenia. You've got, I mean, there's a bunch of Serbia's really good with Jokic. Like, there's just really good international teams. And if the U.S. U.S. can't roll out the JV team and win the gold anymore. Like, you better bring it. And I'm curious. Yeah, I think that this is part of that adjustment. I think this is Grant Hill saying, this is what I've got to do to get guys.
So, I mean, like I said, we'll see. We'll see how this plays out. I'm keeping a very close eye on it, Kurt.
Well, you and I both, we work at NBC. We'll be watching a lot of it, but then watching this at the World Cup. But we should talk about where the passion is for the next couple of weeks. The NCAA tournament's coming up, man.
March Madness. I know it's here. Do you have did you fill out your bracket? What do you think?
I have not filled out a full bracket yet. I kind of got to get to that today, I guess. But I look, I'm wearing the UC. UC Santa Barbara gear today for the people watching on NBC Sports or YouTube and not on not listening to this podcast. I am wearing my quarter zip. As a suburban dad, I'm required by law to have a lot of quarter zips. UCSB jacket where my daughter goes there, but we've been rooting for them all season. Because of them and because I live near Long Beach State, I watch, like, Big West basketball is kind of weirdly my escape. It is my – if I just want to go watch a game and have a beer and not have to think about writing out of it or talking to the coach afterward or all the – everything that comes with the job of writing about the NBA that I love, but it is a job at times. If I just want to have a beer and watch a game, I can go over to Long Beach State. And so I watched a fair amount of Big West this year, and this was the best team. Santa Barbara was the best team. It's not just that my daughter goes there and I'm kind of invested. They move the ball, they shoot, and Baylor is a bad defensive team. And so that's a Friday game. I think I want to say 1:30 Eastern. It might be 2:30, 1:30 or 2:30 Eastern. This could be one of those matchups where Baylor is in for a little bit of a surprise because this team moves the ball, shoots the ball, brought back almost all their starters, has a guy who's going to play internationally, like, and can get into the paint. Santa Barbara's going to be a problem for Baylor. So anyway, I'm all in on Santa Barbara.
Yeah, I think there are going to be a lot of interesting upsets on the men's side. I think the men's side have been just so, like, it's kind of been – it's been hard to follow. I think the only two consistent teams have been the Houston, who now Marcus Sasser's injured, right? And then Purdue. And so, like, for me, like, those are, like, the only two that have been really consistent all year long at the top. And then everyone else, like Alabama, I think is surging. I think they'll make it to the Final Four. I think Kansas will make it to the Final Four. I think they'll probably repeat. And that's my personal opinion. But like, all the other top teams, like, you know, I've seen enough teams this year be in the top 10 or 15, then drop out and then somehow get back into the top. It's kind of been crazy, Kurt. So I do think there's going to be a lot of really great upsets. I think there's going to be a lot of madness this year. But my Final Four, you know, I think Duke is actually going to upset.
Duke's good, yeah.
Yeah, I think Duke is going to upset Purdue because they're in the same quadrant.
Everybody's high on them, they're going to have the Collegiate Player of the Year. I think Purdue's beatable.
That's what I'm saying. And that's what I mean is that, like, it's kind of confusing a little bit men's basketball this year where I'm like, I don't know. Like, the two most consistent teams, I think Houston's very beatable right now, obviously.
You know, that's by the way, the betting favorite for people watching at home.
Yeah, I mean, I think because Houston's in the same bracket as Texas and Texas A&M. And I think Texas is playing really well. Like, so I think Texas, I think a Texas team will get out of there. And I think it's going to be University of Texas. And like I said, I think Purdue is going to get upset by Duke, which is like peaking at the right moment, man. But for me, the women's side is not nearly as variable. For me, it's like coming second to South Carolina.
Yeah, exactly. They are such a wooden-esque type of juggernaut where you're like, you're looking for who can upset them. But, you know, hey, you're Iowa.
Yeah, I mean, I was in the same quadrant as Stanford. And Stanford, I mean, I think they've won two championships in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to, I mean, they're, but they did get upset by UCLA in the conference tournament. So, like, I do think Stanford is a little weak right now. I think Iowa is playing out of their mind. Caitlin Clark, you know, I think her conference tournament was crazy. And I think that team, you're talking about returning stars from UCSB, like, that team is deep. They're all bets. And they've been through that kind of the ringer. I think that they could upset Stanford and end up going to the Final Four, but they're going to have to play against South Carolina. You know, and that's tough. And then on the other side, Virginia Tech, 11-game win streak. You know, they look really great. Indiana is number one seed. You know, I think there's some teams that are interesting, but no one, in my opinion, can beat South Carolina. I think UConn is going to get to the Final Four, despite all the injuries. I do think they'll do the same thing they did last year and somehow get to the championship game.
Yeah, I still, and I'm with you. Ultimately, I think the team that beats South Carolina is South Carolina. If they're playing well, I don't know who touches them.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the bracketology by Kurt and Corey. So we'll see if we're right.
Mortgage. Go for it. Yeah.
We'll see if we're right. I mean, anyways, Kurt, always a pleasure to talk basketball with you. If you want to know what Kurt and his team are up to, why don't you just go over to NBCSports.com/NBA. It'll all be there for you. Kurt, looking forward to next week.
Looking forward to it.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.